It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss. Lightning Thursday is brought to you by Fletcher Park Inn, independent Christian retirement community. Fletcher Park Inn, Henderson County's best-kept retirement secret.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Lightning Radio this morning. Lightning is the Hendersonville Lightning is on the streets. It's in your mailboxes and it is on the radio. And Bill Moss is on the road. So Lightning Radio comes to us via Skype this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Glad to be back for the weekly Lightning Radio show.
Yes, and we're glad to have you via Skype, Bill. And one of the things we wanted to make sure we did, you're out of town this week, but we really wanted to follow up on the story that you started with last week's Lightning, but boy, this week's Lightning really finishing and giving all the fine details, and that's the what you call the serpentine solution, right?
That's exactly right. That's the theme. And we did indeed travel last week for the start of the project out to Grand Junction, Colorado, and we took the reader with us and explained what we kind of called the model, or it was like looking at our mother when you saw the serpentine pattern in Grand Junction, Colorado, which pioneered that form and that approach to downtown revitalization about 11 or 12 years before we started our serpentine, which we know has led to what we have today.
One of the things I found interesting about reading this article that's in the Lightning this week is for years I've always heard that the reason why they put the serpentine solution there was to stop the kids from dragging, you know, and from cruising Main Street. But it's a whole lot more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I had heard that as a factor, maybe a primary factor. I would say the research, and we did a lot, we did a ton of interviews, would suggest that, to be sure, that was a concern of the merchants, the shopkeepers, and just some of the folks in town. It was common. It was fun if you were a teenager to cruise from, say, the Hasty Tasty down to Brock's or later Hardee's and then cruise back. And but it wasn't really the primary factor. The primary factor was really much more generally economic and the recognition of trends. And we get to that right up at the top, and we say to the casual observer, the main Hendersonville's Main Street must have looked like it was fairly healthy in 1974. Another thing, Mark, that's interesting is that people often say, or they kind of misremember that the Serpentine project happened at the same time that Blue Ridge Mall was built. That's not true. Belk and Penney's were still there. The downtown had lost about five kind of old-fashioned conventional drugstores at that time. But the two major department store brand name anchors, Belk's and Penney's, were still on Main Street. And that's another important part of how visionary these leaders were to get this project done. And we kind of explained, we kind of promised last week that while we were in Grand Junction last week, this week would be very Hendersonville centric, and that's what this story is. It tells the who, what, where, when, why, and how the Serpentine project happened here in Hendersonville.
So without giving the whole story, because people need to read their Lightning, and there's no way we have time to even give the whole story based on the coverage you've given it. So tell us what happens. We get a few key business leaders in Hendersonville who go out to Colorado, see the Serpentine Street, come back. They think that it's the right thing to do. They get some other city leaders that think it's the right thing to do. But then what happens next? Where do you go to make it happen ultimately? You got to have the dollars
absolutely
for it. You
got Right. And it is along what we call, we do this a couple times a year, magazine style. It's about a 4,000 word story, one of the longer versions we do. The biggest, longest one we ever did was called Big Forest, about recruiting Sierra Nevada about 6 years ago.
Yes, award winning.
We've done major projects like this from time to time because we think the community deserves that inside and in-depth look as to something really important. And you're exactly right. Those original leaders driving it were Kermit Edney, which and I think this show will be great for any of our natives, and we have a lot of them in our in the community listening audience, and people that have been here in Hendersonville, Henderson County for, let's say, at least 50 years that have a living memory of this. And that is Kermit Edney, well-known radio broadcaster in the other radio station from the other station across town, and Jody Barber, the well-known from the beloved Barber family. Those were Kermit Edney and Jody Barber were the chief original proposer of the downtown project. And then they got D.B. Keith, the Brunson's owner, was very interested. Sam McGirt. McGirt was at that time. There's always been a main Duke Power executive, usually in Hendersonville. Yeah. We have one now that's actually based down in Shelby, I think. But Sam McGirt was that figure for Hendersonville. He got on the committee. So they started out when they researched what revitalization had worked well. All roads led to Grand Junction, and they went out there on the trip. We have an account of that, what they found and learned and came back with from Grand Junction. And then they set about selling it, first to the what was then called the Hendersonville City Commission, and to the mayor, Mayor Boyce Whitmire. And the mayor had a lot of power then because it was before Hendersonville had a city manager. So there's a real interesting chapter about what happens next when they try to sell it to the city commission.
Exactly. And then, of course, there are opponents out there also. Not everybody believes in this thing, right?
Oh, no. No doubt about it. We know a lot about that today, whether it's from a Canoga widening, roundabouts, Balfour Parkway, or rezonings that introduce what I sometimes call a disruptive land use. We know that's common today and actually pretty successful today. The Duke Power Lines, along with Balfour Parkway, are the biggest successes against disruptive land uses in all the time I've been here, and certainly in the past 10 years. But what happened here was a little bit different. Let's go back to the city commission.
Yeah, absolutely.
When they went and they costed this thing out, they had an estimate that it would cost, that they needed $250,000. They go to Mayor Whitmire and the city commission, and they say, well, we've supported the merchants a lot over the years, and we think they should step up. So you're not going to get the $250,000 cash from us. But we will take you up on your idea, which came from the downtown businesses and property owners, to impose a tax through what was called a municipal taxing district, which the North Carolina legislature had approved in fairly recent in only about, I think, 3 or 4 years before that. So that was available. They said, okay, we'll take it. We, the property owners, will pay the 30 cent per $100 valuation downtown property tax in order to fund the Serpentine project. That the city then did also offer quite a bit of help of labor from Public Works, from the Water Department. And they offered Bill Lapsey, who turns out to be a key figure in this story, along with then Police Chief Bill Powers, who also became basically construction project manager in addition to his police chief hat. So it was very interesting the way they worked together. And no one, you know, you talk about the public opposing different projects, whether it's road projects or a new apartment complex or whatever. And it usually comes up that this is going to cost us the property, the taxpayer, in some way or other. Kermit Edney and Jody Barber and the rest of them could say, no, really won't. We have elected and volunteered to be taxed ourselves to pay for this. And that kind of headed off one of the common reasons you hear for not to do something.
Yeah, and again, we've talked about the vision of the folks, because there were a lot of people who didn't necessarily think downtown was an issue yet.
They did not see the need. As we go back to talk about the had two anchors and really lots of stores. There weren't a lot of vacant storefronts. It was just that Kermit Edney and Jody Barber, they knew that this was coming, that the trend was going to change. They recognized these warning signs, stagnation of the downtown. They knew the flight of the shoppers to the suburbs and the likelihood that even if there was not one on the immediate horizon, the likelihood that Hendersonville was big enough to support an enclosed mall, as we say, which had acres of parking, climate control, and the ability to lure that brand name anchor from Main Street out into the suburbs. And sure enough, it did happen about 7 years after the Serpentine project was complete. And we go on through, there's an entire chapter about the campaign, how it was waged and why it worked. But we also talk about, and we have a news clip here from, we did a lot of research in the library of Times News clips, and they had one story before it was really done. They did an in-newspaper poll, which people could cut out and send back, and they said those ballots were running 3-1 against the Serpentine pattern. Some downtown business owners who had originally been in favor of it changed their mind and came back with signatures of 74 downtown merchants, shopkeepers, and property owners who now oppose the plan. So another thing we seem to look back, but because of the success of it now, we either think, oh, it must have always been that way, or, well, that's such a good thing. That must have just, sailed through. That must have been greased from the start. It wasn't. There was a lot of opposition. The leaders of it had to keep selling, and work really hard to make that campaign successful to sell what really was a dramatic change.
It's interesting that they had to keep working even through the construction. I see chapter 3 here, construction. Oh, you've destroyed Main Street.
There's no doubt about that. Again, Bill Lapsley talks about that, and we talk about all the things that were going on under construction. Exactly, crews tore up the old four-lane pattern and replaced it with the S-shaped solution. They widened the sidewalks, added mid-block crosswalks and planters. They dug trenches. They took out what the city gardener said were ailing, sick maple trees and put in 25 linden trees that she ordered from a nursery in New Jersey. They buried the water. They had to redo the stormwater drainage. And Lapsley says in this quote, "I remember some people raising cane. Oh, yeah, you've destroyed Main Street. What a waste. This is ridiculous." And then he goes, and 1 year later, all the buildings were full. 5 years later, you think it was the greatest thing since ice cream.
Absolutely. And the perfect way to wrap this part of Lightning Thursday up with this story is your final chapter on this. Chapter 4, they had a vision.
They had a vision, and they had the spine to carry it out in the face of opposition. There was opposition for sure. And like we say in the key paragraph of that chapter is the leaders of the Serpentine solution could have made concessions or surrendered altogether. We've seen that around these parts here lately.
Yeah.
They could have made concessions or surrendered altogether in the face of the vitriol, a reaction far more common in today's climate of social media campaigns, yard sign proliferation, and government mistrust. But they didn't do that. They knew it was right. They knew that it needed to be done. They weren't, key point, they weren't elected officials themselves, really, that was driving it.
Yeah.
They stuck to it. They drove it on through to completion, and I don't think anyone would argue. I can't find anybody that will say it was not a success.
Absolutely. And the pictures that you have here, both last week's Lightning and this week's Lightning, are just fantastic.
Yeah, they're really fun. It's unbelievable, the number. And this was toward the tail end of our reporting. We discovered that the city of Hendersonville had really good old cache of color slides, well, black and white and color, actually, of some street scenes of the trip to the Grand Junction, the flower beds, just a bunch of stuff that was really useful to us. I mean, there's tons of pictures that ended up on the cutting room floor for lack of space, but yeah. Look for those possibly in a future print issue, but for sure at HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You're listening to Lightning Thursdays here on The Q. We do it every Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, coming to us via Skype today. We'll be right back after these messages.
Fletcher Park Inn is the best-kept retirement secret in Henderson County. Make plans now to come for your tour and complimentary lunch at the only Christian independent retirement community in the area that offers a daily lunch buffet with meat and vegetarian and vegan options. Don't miss our summer special. Sign up before Labor Day and your first month is totally free. Come and see our spacious remodeled apartments available now. Call Lisa for details, 209-6935. This is Linda McIntyre, director at Fletcher Park Inn, inviting you to visit today.
Lewis Williams & Sons is the area's largest distributor of mobile home supplies. Whether you need doors, windows, plumbing, or skirting, Lewis Williams & Sons has anything you need for your mobile home. Visit Lewis Williams & Sons in sunny and friendly East Flat Rock at 300 West King Street, just down the street from Case & Builder Supply. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. Lewis Williams & Sons, 692-8216 or online at lewiswilliams.com. The 305 Lounge and Eatery, right next door to historic Mike's on Main, home of Aubrey's famous wings and sauces. And now also the home of college football every Saturday. Catch the games on the big screen, enjoy wing and beer specials, and the full Mike's on Main menu at the 305 Lounge and Eatery. Craft beer, local cider, regional wines, and a unique and bright atmosphere at the 305. And don't forget to fill the blue buckets for autism at the 305 Lounge and Eatery and Mike's on Main in downtown Hendersonville. Duraline Imaging, the local company that you can trust as your single point of contact for office equipment sales, supplies, service, and repair. Duraline Imaging provides copier and printer sales and service solutions that lower cost, reduce waste, and simplify operations. Give Duraline a chance to earn your trust and your business by giving them a call today at 692-1301. Duraline Imaging, 692-1301. Relationships matter, and trust must be earned. Trust Duraline Imaging, Upward Road in Hendersonville.
And we're back with editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, Mr. Bill Moss, who is joining us via Skype this morning for Lightning Thursdays. So, Bill, we've been talking about streets. Let's talk a little bit about water now. This is a story that was touched on in last week's Lightning, and we touched on it on Lightning Radio, but you have a follow-up here to it. The headline, River Access Complaints, Very Gray Area of the Law. Fill that in for us, Bill.
That it is. Yeah, that's a good segue because a river doesn't run straight either, like our main street does not run straight. And one of the keys here to the river, okay, you recall that last week we had the story based on a meeting of the Mills River Town Council where a bunch of people showed up and filled up about three quarters of the room, and I'd say about eight or nine of them rose to speak, very angry, several of them emotional, about what they regard as bullying. They called bullying tactics by a landowner and well-known farmer, owner of North River Farm, Jason Davis, saying that Jason Davis, in part, they said, because he has a fishing guide business, had been putting up a lot of no trespassing signs in and around the river and had attempted to control access to the river, that they said, the people that want to use the river, that is, with great confidence, was protected by, you name it, case law, North Carolina law, the United States Constitution, the United States Supreme Court and precedent-setting cases that had reached the Supreme Court. And so we finally got hold of a guy with some expertise in this area, Captain Andrew Helton of the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, and he knew a little bit about the Mills River complaints. He knew a lot about the subject in general, and this story has a lot of quotes from him that goes on to really say it is, as the headline suggests, a very gray area that's not really quite settled law. There's kind of two conflicting laws or court cases that control access to a body of water, but also give landowners anywhere, really, but that would include, of course, landowners who own land abutting a river or a navigable waterway. It gives them the right to police and protect their land. It'll say, Mark, that there's a state Supreme Court case that is supposedly controlling that if a body of water in its natural condition can be navigated by watercraft, it is navigable in fact and therefore navigable in law, even if it has not been used for such purpose. So even that is open to interpretation. And talking to Captain Elton, where he said, well, if you could get on a raft or a kayak or even an inner tube at the headwaters where the reservoirs are and float down, let's say, all the way to the French Broad or whatever, he said, that sounds navigable to me. So it's not really clear, but it looks like it probably would be, because people do canoe it and they kayak it and they float it in other means. On the other hand, in the state of North Carolina, something called the Landowner Protection Act ensures landowners the right, and this is the quote, to post their lands to allow only hunters, trappers, and anglers with written permission to legally enter their property. So that's kind of the crux of the legal quandary as to which is controlling. Clearly, Jason Davis, if it's land he controls either by ownership or by leasing it, then he can post it. He can tell people to stay off of it. He can insist they have his permission to hunt or even certainly to cross that land to go on the river, either to fish or to float. I don't know if this doesn't clear up the dispute very much, but it does show why it's hard to get a successful trespassing complaint. The Wildlife Resources Captain also says they have very few of those, because it really isn't clear cut that somebody, if they're in a river, can be charged with trespassing, because that part is supposed to be you're supposed to be entitled to be in a river if you're standing in it fishing it or if you're floating down it. That doesn't belong to the landowner on either side.
Okay, so that's where it sits right now, is that since it's navigable, you are able to trespass, for lack of a better word?
I'm not sure we even clear it up to that degree, but this just, I think, goes to show it's not surprising that both sides, Jason Davis, who also was at that meeting and said he had done everything according to North Carolina law, and he had actually had it checked and validated by Game and Fish and the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. The other side was equally confident, that they were within their right to get on the river whenever they want to and fish as much as they wanted to. I don't think it clears everything up. We also checked with the sheriff's office and asked them, because in that meeting, these people protesting what they described as interference, it sounded as if that the sheriff's deputies had gone out there and maybe made a lot of trespassing citations. But in talking with, so we checked with Major Frank Stout of the sheriff's office to find out how many there were. And he didn't turn up any. And the only arrest he turned up was somebody that there had been a complaint against this person for trespassing. And there was an arrest, but the arrest was not for trespassing. It was for outstanding warrants.
Okay.
So it kicks the can down the road a little bit, but it's not dispositive in terms of the ultimate outcome of these cases or these complaints.
Well, speaking of kicking the can down the road, let's move to our next story, and this is a story that is, of course, on your website right now, HendersonvilleLightning.com. NCDOT poised to award $271 million contract for I-26 widening. Looks like it's coming. Looks like it's going to happen, huh?
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? And we're now, Mark, up over $500 million. I think the segment from the airport to what we used to think of as malfunction, somewhat improved now, malfunction junction 40, 240 and all that. That eight laning, that came in at about, I think, 263. So we're up over a half a billion dollars for this widening. Let's talk about Henderson County for this widening that has been talked about, I know, since the 80s. And they almost had it had a project that was going to go through before it was stopped by a lawsuit over environmental concerns in the early aughts. And so it has been talked about. It's been the highest priority of all of the Transportation Advisory Committee, the County Commission, for years and years and years. And you're exactly right. That's the takeaway from this story. A contract is the only thing left to officially award that is it has to go to the North Carolina Board of Transportation in its, I think, October meeting. It's coming up very soon. Early next year, you'll see work on that. By this year, in just in a matter of weeks, you'll see work on the Buncombe part of it. So this contract that will be let and this work that will begin is for the airport exit to the Four Seasons Boulevard exit. Very interestingly, that includes the Blue Ridge Parkway Bridge. That's that high span.
Yep.
That's going to be really fun to watch. It includes that. It includes a lot of retaining wall work, some interchange improvements, but most of those have gotten on hold with this cash shortfall that the NCDOT has come up has hit the NCDOT mainly because of the huge flooding damages of the last two hurricanes in 2017 and 2018, I think it was. But this one's coming. Yeah, we do not yet have a duration for the project, but we do have a commitment in that news release from the NCDOT that they will keep two lanes open, and that's two lanes in either direction.
Wow.
They say that they will keep two lanes open during the day for the duration of the construction project.
Wow, that's remarkable. This also includes the two rest areas too, right?
Yes. Yep. Exactly right. Redoing the rest areas. There's a lot to it. It's going to look like we just opened the show. We're talking about something that's dramatic change.
Uh-huh.
It goes from a 4-lane road to a 6-lane road. You say big deal, but it will look different. It'll be a nice new road, and maybe by, I don't know, 2025, you'll be able to drive west from Hendersonville to Asheville and actually get there sometime in the afternoon.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Hey, let's finish up on a fun note. You've got a really fantastic review here of Flat Rock Playhouse's Cinematastic, which is continuing its run through this coming Saturday.
Yeah, our reviewer, our critic, Olivia Stuller, finds that Cinematastic is fantastic, gives a huge rave and shout out to the whole show, the dancers, the singers, the set, the music, but especially to what she describes as the endlessly gifted Matthew Glover, who is the creator, director, choreographer, and one of the stars and singers of this big, big show. So if you like movie music, and who doesn't, then get out there to see the cast and see young Matthew Glover, a graduate of Hendersonville High School, and another of his this is not the first one, another of his created and starred in shows.
I'm glad you made that point. This is not his first one. He certainly did the last two Christmas or holiday shows and did the Broadway music show last year that everyone loved so much. These have turned into the most popular shows at the Playhouse, and it's so great that they're conceived by and written by one of our very own.
Yeah. My windshield survey on the nights that they have a show of the Playhouse parking lot has shown good. A good gate for for this show, and it, so good for that. And I think Matthew will reprise the Christmas show one more time this year, right?
Yep, it's coming. It's coming.
Yep.
So we want to remind folks, you've got through this coming Saturday to see Cinematastic at Flat Rock Playhouse. Well, Bill,
and then some country, bluegrass, and old time music with Smoke on the Mountain following that.
That's right.
October 4 to October 19.
That's right. We're going to have some of those guys in the studio with us tomorrow morning to just to give you a little teaser for it. So that's going to be fun. Bill, thanks so much for Skyping in for Lightning Thursday today. And please say thank you to your lovely bride, Elizabeth, for taking the wheel while you handle the Lightning radio portion.
She's a better and faster driver than I am, so as much as I can get her to do the driving while I'm doing the snoozing, the quicker we'll get there.
Fantastic. All right, folks, Lightning is on the radio. Lightning is in the streets. It's in your mailboxes. Bill, tell folks how they can get a copy of their Lightning.
Well, am I going to any of those 60 Lightning Orange racks all around the county, or our dealer partners such as Dominion Stores or the Publix supermarket, or by clicking on that red tab that says subscribe, which will walk them through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans who get their Lightning today, Lightning Thursday, via U.S. mail, or by calling Jan at 698-0407, or best of all, by coming to see us at 1111 Asheville Highway.
Thanks, Bill, and safe travels.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This and other episodes of Lightning Thursday are available via podcast at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday. Lightning Thursday is brought to you weekly by Fletcher Park Inn, independent Christian retirement community. Fletcher Park Inn, Henderson County's best kept retirement secret.